Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is WebSphere MQ Triggering Concepts and Problem Determination. Today's presenter is Bill Newcomb. Bill has worked for 10 years at IBM WebSphere MQ and Message Broker. He has been doing product support for WebSphere MQ for the last 2 years. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Bill.
Thank you, Joseph. May we go to slide 2, please? And this is the agenda. Today, I will briefly discuss the MQ components that are required to make triggering work. I will discuss the different types of triggers that are available using WebSphere MQ. And lastly, I will discuss some suggestions to help you solve problems that you may have when you're trying to set up a triggering environment or a particular application. Slide 3, please. Okay, the components that make up triggering are a local queue definition, a process definition, a trigger monitor application, and an initiation queue that the trigger monitor listens to. What happens when a message arrives on a local queue that causes a trigger event, which we'll discuss later? The trigger message is written to the initiation queue. This message is read by the trigger monitor application, which will then take the appropriate action. Normally, this is to start an application that is meant to process the messages in the queue that triggered the process. But it can also be for some other event, such as to start a channel for the trigger monitor that comes with the product for starting channels. Normally, it'll start a process that just reads messages. It could start a process that does end-of-day processing or start a channel or anything that you can design. Okay, so the first object, and what I'm going to discuss is what the object is, and the parameters that you see below it are the ones that are specific to triggering, and they're definitely not all the parameters that are part of a local queue definition. So a local queue is the object that, when it receives an appropriate message, will generate the trigger event. These parameters that you see here are specific to triggering and aren't used for anything else. The first one, which is process, is the name of the MQ process definition that contains the information that the trigger monitor requires to start the process. So it's the local queue just has a pointer to a different object, and it's in the process name. An IT queue, or initiation queue, is the initiation queue that the queue manager will write a trigger message to when a trigger event occurs from this queue. Trigger depth and trigger priority I'll discuss later when I go into different types of trigger events. Trigger data was added, I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago so that it would not be required to create a process definition if you wanted to start a channel, and is now used to hold the name of the channel to be started for the channel initiator. So this is just to make it a little simpler to trigger a channel definition. The trig type will be either first, depth, every, or none. Trig end priority is trigger message priority, and that one's also one I'll discuss when we get into the types of triggering. The last parameter there is trigger or no trigger is really just a switch to say whether triggering is on or off for this queue so that you can manually, or the queue manager can turn it on or turn it off by toggling this parameter. The MQ process definition is used to supply the information needed by the trigger monitor to start the application process. The application CID should be the absolute path to the application that is to be started. If you were to put a relative path here, then it will be relative to where the trigger monitor is started, and you may get different results depending on where you start the trigger monitor from. So I would recommend that you always put an absolute path or you start something that's in your environment's path. Application type is dependent on the operating system, and normally you won't put anything here. You just let it default for that operating system that the queue manager is running on. Environmental data is a character string that contains environment information pertaining to the application to be started. For Unix systems, this is usually used to start a triggered process as a background process by placing an ampersand here. I mean, so it's pretty normal. If you're not going to start in the background, you probably won't use environmental data or envir data for anything else. Really, envir data is determined by the trigger monitor itself, and the trigger monitor that's provided with WebSphere MQ pins what's in this to the field, to the parameter list path to the started application. The parameter list contains the WMQ TMC structure, followed by one blank, followed by environmental data with trailing blanks removed. And actually, I'll show an example of what the environmental data looks like later also. User data is just passed to the application as part of the parameter string. So you can put anything you want in here so that it'll be passed to your application. If you have any specific requirements that if your application is started by this queue, you'd like it to have passed this user data, you can put that there, or you can just leave it blank, however your design works. All right, can we go to slide 4, please? This is the initiation queue. The initiation queue is just a local queue that is read by the trigger monitor to watch for trigger events. There are no special definitions required for an initiation queue. You just define a local queue with all the defaults, and when you start the trigger monitor, you specify that queue for it to listen to. The next is a list of three trigger monitors that we see on Unix systems and on Windows. ZOS has some different ones. RunMQTRM is the default that comes with the product. RunMQTMC is the default client trigger monitor so that you can actually trigger a process on a server that doesn't have an MQ server installed. RunMQCHI is the special trigger monitor that comes with the application that starts channels. The next one we see there is an example of the format of a trigger message. So you can see what happens is this trigger message, when your process is started, is passed to your process, and so you can find out the name of the queue that started the process, the name of the MQ process name, the trigger data, application ID, environmental data, and then the user data. So all that's in there so that the program that started can look to see what queue triggered it, and then open that queue and read the messages from it. Finally, on this page, we have trigger interval, and it's really not an object. It's part of the queue manager definition, and it only applies to trigger type first. And it's an integer specified in milliseconds. Again, this one I'll cover a little more when we go into the different trigger types, because it applies to trigger type first, and I'll discuss it with that. Okay, can we go to slide 5, please? Okay, now to discuss the different trigger types. The most common used trigger type is trigger type first. A trigger event is generated whenever the queue transitions from 0 to a non-zero value. And I say that because it doesn't have to go from 0 to 1. It goes from 0 to anything greater than 0 will cause a trigger event with the following conditions. The queue cannot already be open for input. The idea with trigger type first is that you're only going to have one process at a time, and that trigger process is going to read the queue until it's empty. So if there's a transition from 0 to 1 and there's a process that already has the queue open, the queue manager will not cause another trigger event because it's going to assume that that process is going to read the queue. All right, the next one is depth. And with depth, the trigger event is generated when the current depth meets or exceeds the trigger depth that you specified in the queue definition. So the queue manager will set triggering to off once it generates a triggering event, and the application must turn the triggering back on before exiting. Or the next time the queue builds up to past depth, that trigger switch will be off and it won't be re-triggered. And the queue can also not already be open for input or event won't be generated. The final one is every. And with every, a trigger event is generated for every message that arrives on the queue. Now, this could potentially end up starting thousands of processes if the messages arrive faster than the trigger application can process them, and the triggered process is started as a background process. So So you have to be real careful with this because you could potentially just overrun your system with processes that are started. And if you have a reason to need to use trigger type every, you may want to consider starting the trigger application in the foreground so the trigger monitor will not start a new process until the previous process is in. Now, if you do need every for some reason and some level of multiprocessing, you may wish to have more than one trigger monitor reading the same initiation queue. And that's perfectly acceptable. You can have a queue point to an initiation queue that is read by as many trigger monitors as you require. If all of those trigger monitors start processes in the foreground, then those can actually give you a level of multiprocessing in that once each one of those trigger monitors is busy, it won't be able to start another process. Now, whether or not that's useful to you or not, I don't know, because you still have the problem of whether or not there's enough processes to process messages coming in quickly enough. So that's something that you have to determine in your application design. But it is available for you to use if you wish. Slide 6, please. The final parameter for trigger type is priority. And priority works in combination with the other trigger types. And basically the rules are the same, except now that it takes into the priority of the message when it looks to apply a trigger event. So if you have trigger type first and you have priority of 2, for example, then if the trigger event will only be generated when the first message with priority 2 or greater arrives on the queue. So if you were to send many messages with priority 0 or priority 1, they will not generate a trigger event until the first one of priority that's greater than or equal to the trigger message priority. This is the same is true with every or depth. You just have to apply the priority to the rules that I already gave you for first, every, and depth. And what I want to do is put a possible use for this one because it's not necessarily real obvious why you would use priority. But let's say you send a batch of messages. You don't know how many is going to be in the batch. So what you can do is you can design your application so that all the messages are, say, priority 0. And when you've sent all your messages, the last message you'll send is with a trigger message priority 2. Make sure all of these messages have the same message ID in them. And your queue has the message delivery sequence as priority. So what will happen is you'll get a trigger when the priority 2 message arrives on the queue. It'll be delivered first. The application can read that message, get the message ID, and then do reads of the queue from that point on using that message ID until there are no more. Then you will process just that batch of messages. So that's a possible use, and you may think of others. One of the things you have to be real careful if you're in a clustered environment and you have more than one queue that's triggering on priority, one cluster queue, you may not get what you want unless your application opens the queue with a bind on open so that all the messages go to the same queue. Because if you get some messages go to Q1 and the other one go to a different Q1 on a different queue manager, it's never going to work the way you designed it. So you need to make sure all the messages go to the same queue if you're using clusters, so you would need to use something like bind on open in your application. Well, let's see. Slide 7, please. This is just a note to let you know that for non-shared local queues, and that is the OS reference, the queue manager counts the both committed and uncommitted messages when it assesses whether the trigger event has occurred. So your application can start, can be triggered to start, and all the messages in the queue may be uncommitted at that time, so when it goes to do a get, it's going to not get a message back. So what you may want to do is design for this by making sure you put a suitable wait interval on your get to give it time to make sure that there's messages in the queue. This is probably for most people a fairly rare event, but if you're not committing every message or for some reason there's a long delay between the put and the commit, it's a potential problem that you could see. This one is, I want to go back to the environmental data. It says, Trigger does not look at it for another message until the completion of the application it has started. So basically, it's single threads things by default. And quite most of the time, you're going to have not very many trigger monitors and maybe only one. And it may be looking at the system.default.initiation queue, and you'll have many, many queues that have that specified as the init queue. Well, if you don't start the applications in the background, then everything's going to single thread. And you're going to end up with queues that aren't getting processed because some other queue is still being processed. So the way to get around that is for Unix systems, you put an ampersand in the environmental data. And for a Windows system, you append start space before the application CID, so it'll start it in another window or as a background process. And then as soon as the start completes or the background process is initiated, then the trigger monitor can go back and get and read another trigger message. So this way you won't hold up other queues getting processed. Slide 8, please. All right, this is actually the part that I really wanted to do, which was to help diagnose trigger problems. So I wanted just to give you some ideas of what you can do to diagnose the different trigger problems that you might see when you set everything up and for some reason it looks like your messages aren't getting processed out of your queue or your application isn't starting. What do I do now? The easiest one, as long as, and I say this, but if it's not a production environment, it may not be an easy one to do, is just to stop my trigger monitor and then start it in the foreground in my current session. When you do that, then any messages that the trigger monitor writes will come right back to your screen, and you can see it trigger the processes. You can see the processes, any output from the processes if they write to standard out or standard error. And then you can see it complete. So it's a real simple, easy way to see what's going on. Another way that it's very much similar is just take your standard trigger monitor and send the standard error and standard out to a file. Then you can go back anytime you want and you can look at the file. You have to be real careful if you have long-running trigger monitors, and I would say most of you do because you only recycle them when you recycle the queue manager. That file could get very big. There's nothing to keep it from, just growing until it takes up your whole file system. So if you were to do that, you need to be real careful with it to make sure that you do something to either recycle the trigger monitor or to release that space. Another one, in case you have an environment where you have a lot of queues using your trigger monitor, and you want to debug it, is run a second instance of a trigger monitor with a different initiation queue. So really all you have to do is go to your queue local and pick some other queue, my init queue, start another trigger monitor, and tell it to look at my init queue. That way it won't affect any testing being done by someone else with the first trigger monitor, and you can now isolate your testing. And then use one of the methods above that I just talked about, which is to run in the foreground or direct the standard out or standard error from that trigger monitor to some file where you can look at it. Make sure you check the backout count to get out of trigger loops. It might be that you're getting triggered, you're getting an error, your message is getting backed out, which is causing the trigger event to happen again, so you're getting triggered again. So you can get in an indefinite loop of being triggered. So it's a good idea to check the backout count on the message and see if that's the case, and if you are, you may want to write to a backout queue. The final thing is to use trace. Trace is very powerful, and I would say just running the trigger monitor in the foreground or putting things to a file and running the second trigger monitor, you can probably resolve 80-90% of any problems that you'll ever find just with that. But there's going to be sometimes that there's something that's not so obvious that's going on, and you'll need to use trace. So on the next slides, I'm going to have an example environment that I've set up, and I'm going to show you some of the output that you can expect to see from doing these different methods. So can we go to slide 9, please? Okay, so here's my example definition. My QLocal, it has a process called TrigProc. Not very imaginative, but I'm keeping it as simple, and I'm not all that imaginative myself. The initiation queue is called MyInit queue. The trig type is first, and trigger is set on. And none of the other parameters are set in this case because I don't need them. And in trig type first, you're probably not going to ever need the other ones either unless you're trying to use trig message priority for some reason. My process definition has an application CID of /trigproc. This is an example of what not to do because it's a relative path. And as long as I start my trigger monitor where this trigproc, in this case script, runs, I'm okay. But if this was a production environment, then I really don't know where things are going to be started from. I could get unexpected results. So you really don't want to do a relative path in application CID. The application type is Unix in this case, and I put an ampersand in environmental data so that my process will be started in the background. I started the run MQTRM as Bill reading in my init queue, and I started it in the background also. So that's the basis of this test. Slide 10, please. Okay, so this is what the output looks like. This could have been started in the foreground, or I could have been just redirecting my output, my standard error, to a file. In either case, this is what it looked like. You'll see trigger monitor started, followed by waiting for a trigger message as soon as it doesn't have any messages. When a trigger event comes in, you'll see the following line, which shows the trigger process, the TMC, the trigger message, the queue that started it, the trig proc. You'll see the environmental data. And then you'll see any messages from the application. In this case, I've got a trig proc starts a program called, MQ read. And it puts out messages, as you can see, that follow. It says it's connected. It finds the current depth of the queue. Reads, prints out the data, gives you the return code, which is, in this case, is all messages were read. And then it says end of application trigger. The trigger monitor put that out, and it'll be followed by waiting for a trigger message. Now, you'll see this repeatedly occur in the output. If you don't see it in with waiting for trigger message, maybe you started it in the foreground, and your process has tied it up, or something has gone wrong with the trigger monitor. But you should always see the waiting for trigger message, and then see the trigger message itself, and then any output, and then waiting for trigger message again. So those will happen in sets. Pretty straightforward, and most trigger problems can be resolved just by watching this output. Slide 11, please. Okay. The next thing we might do is we want to trace the trigger monitor because we want to actually see that our process of getting started. So I've given you some examples here. If you look at this, it's saying start trace for queue manager Bill and for process run MQTRM. Now, this is a version 7 trace parameter, and you can't do it on version 6 or before. On version 6 or before, you're going to have to just trace everything and then go find the correct trace for the run MQTRM process when you're done. Now, you can also use minus I and use the process ID. So, because I might be running several trigger monitors, and I don't want to trace them all. So I can use a process ID. So if I find the process ID ahead of time, I can say just trace that process. So then you'll want to go and create a trigger event, and then you'll do an end MQ trace minus A. I use minus A because it just says turn off all trace. You can also just say for a particular queue manager, but it's simpler to just say in MQ trace minus A. Then format the trace if you're on Unix with DSP MQ trace. Then find the one for that process and go into it using your favorite editor, VI or whatever. And in it, you should see a string like the one below. You'll see the get from the initiation queue. You'll see a start with the application CID. You'll see the execute command and eventually you'll see a return code. But that's not right at the top. There's some other output, but you could probably do a find down there for your application ID, and you'll see that it started or that it got an error back and what it was. So this can be real useful, and and it's pretty straightforward to do. So if you think your trigger monitor is not working and you can't see why just by redirecting output, you might want to try this trace. But like I said, if you're not running version 7, what you would probably want to do is you would find out the process ID of your trigger monitor. Then run, you'll have to start your trace, and it'll process everything. But the trace names are AMQ followed by the process ID and some other characters. So it's pretty easy to recognize which trace goes to which process as long as you know the process ID ahead of time. So that's not so bad. Version 7 makes it easier, though, to limit the amount of trace output that you have. Slide 12, please. Now, the other one you might want to do, and possibly more important than the trigger monitor, is to trace the triggered application. And in this case, again, you see I used version 7 syntax by using the minus P. And I said just trace the AMQ API. Now, that's not version 7. That's all the earlier versions. You can tell it what level of trace to go. And if you notice from us in support, we're going to always tell you to do detailed trace, and we're going to always tell you to trace all. And that's because we don't want to have to go back and keep telling you to do traces again. So we get the highest level of trace the first time so we can go back and make sure we have everything we need. But you may not need to do that, and you may want to limit the output that's produced by the trace. So. And I did in this case, so I just said, just trace the API for me. And in this particular one, there's even with the API, there's still some things in there that I probably didn't need to see, so I just did a grep on capital MQ in the trace file, and this is what I got back. I got the connect and the open, the get, the close, and the disconnect. You can get a real quick look at what your application is doing from an MQ perspective this way, and you might, you know, if things are not working, you might see an MQ back, or you might see the get, not see a close. And in some of my tests that I did take out things like the close so that the message would get backed out into the queue and cause my own little trigger loop. So you can see that here. And if it's still not enough detail, you can do a detailed trace and get the information. Suspect you won't need that. I think that's all I went to go through. I went kind of quickly. I hope not too quickly, but I'll give you a chance to ask questions later. Slide 13, please. Okay, this chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. Visit the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site to learn more about upcoming WebSphere Support Technical Exchange webcasts like the one you're attending today, and access previously recorded presentations. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. Visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The SR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Notifications link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. Thank you. I'll turn this back over to Joseph.
Thank you, Bill, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Susan, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Our first question comes from Jeff Yeh. Your line is open.
This is under the ZOS CSS environment. They say a task has been triggered and process the message from the queue. And before you finish pick up all the messages and then you issue the MQ close, and is that going to be re-triggered again?
No. No, see, if you don't read all the messages in the queue and then you close the queue, which a close is going to commit any messages if you're under sync point implicitly, the queue will not re-trigger. And you'll sit there at you'll have messages in the queue that won't get processed. Now, trigger interval will play in that, though. If you set the trigger interval up to an appropriate amount, when that time elapses between the last trigger event and another message arriving on the queue, it will re-trigger the queue, and so you can kind of protect that situation.
Okay, that re-trigger has to be done on the queue manager level, if I'm correct, right?
The queue manager produces the trigger, the triggering. So yeah, you have to put a trigger. In that case, you would have to put an appropriate trigger interval in there. And then when another message comes onto the queue, it will look to see if the trigger interval has elapsed. And if it has, and there's now, more than zero messages on the queue and it's not empty, it will create another trigger event and re-trigger the queue.
Understood. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The next question comes from Sasha Jane. Your line is open.
Hey, hi. So I'm on slide 5, and I have a question. You mentioned that trigger won't happen if the queue is open for input. So let's say we have an application which actually is putting the messages in the queue, and then there is another application which is going to process the messages which come into the queue. So does that mean that the application which is kind of putting the messages into the queue, unless it actually closes the issues, the command MQ close, there won't be any trigger message which would invoke the application which is supposed to process the messages?
No. It's only open for input. So your application that's putting the messages to the queue has the queue open for output. So that isn't part of the consideration. The process that's reading the queue has it open for input. So if there's already a process that's reading the queue or has it open for input, then it won't cause the trigger event. Is that clear?
Okay. So the message which the application which is putting the message, for that the queue has been open for output, not for input.
Correct. It should be open for output for the one that's putting to the queue, and it'll be open for input from the one that's getting from the queue.
So that means only one application can actually process the message at a time. Am I correct?
No, that's not strictly true. There can be potentially there could be multiple applications that are processing it. The design of that is for that triggering is that only one will be triggered, so that only one will have it open at a time. But so for trigger type first and depth, that's true. But you may decide for some reason to start other processes that process that queue in a different manner. Is that clear?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's clear. Okay, so it's specific to when we are using triggers. Okay.
But that's correct.
Yeah, okay. I get it. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Michael Rye. Your line is
open. Hi. Could you go over again when we should be using default bind of unopen?
Oh, for def bind open, if you're in a clustering environment, and this is true for any of the trigger types, but if you want to ensure that all messages go to the same cluster queue, the same instance of a cluster queue, then you need to use def bind on open. Otherwise, they will just do their normal cluster workload balance, which may be round robin. Now, if you're trying to do a batch type of message, which was my example there, where I'm doing a trigger type of first with priority, so in that case, you want all the messages to be processed by the same process. So you need to make sure all the messages go to the same queue. So you need to open the queue with def bind open. And what that says is until I do a close, all the messages that I put will go to the same instance of the queue.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I show no questions at this time.
Thank you, Susan. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.